This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis. Good morning, everybody. Alan Ellis here. This is the Outdoorsman Radio Show, and my name is Alan Ellis. We are pre-recorded today on this first Saturday of January, but we invite you to listen to a very important show. Our focus today is Canada geese, the iconic Canada goose, the harbinger of winter and hunting season on Maryland's eastern shore in the Delmarva Peninsula. And we've got the three fellows in studio today that can shed some light on this entire Canada goose population situation here that we are faced with here in Maryland. We have today with us Paul Padding, who's the Atlantic Flyway representative, the Division of Migratory Bird Management from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Bill Harvey is the Game Bird Section Leader with Wildlife and Heritage Service, Department of Natural Resources. And Josh Homiak. Did I say that correctly, Josh?
You did, Alan.
All right. Waterfowl Program Manager, who gets to deal with the public, from also Wildlife and Heritage Service, Department of Natural Resources. Welcome, gentlemen. Hi, Bill. Bill's kind of sitting out this round. He's sitting here in the studio in the background, and we'll be hearing a little bit more from Bill here later. Right now we're going to talk to Paul, and we're going to talk to Josh, and we're going to talk about the symbiotic relationship between the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Maryland Department of Natural Resources. Federal government regulates the migratory game birds as they have for over a century.
That's right. And but we share responsibility for those migratory birds with the states, the government of Canada in the person of the Canadian Wildlife Service and the provinces in Canada. So my job title indicates what part of what that relationship is. As the flyway representative for the Atlantic Flyway, I'm the Fish and Wildlife Service's liaison between the service and the states and provinces in the Atlantic Flyway for managing migratory birds. And since we share those responsibilities, it's important that we work closely together. The Atlantic Flyway Council is a coalition of state agencies, provincial agencies, and the territory of Puerto Rico. There are 17 states in the Atlantic Flyway and the Atlantic Flyway Council, 6 provinces, and again, the territory of Puerto Rico. And I'm the liaison between that group and the Fish and Wildlife Service, and Josh can tell you more about what the Atlantic Flyway Council is about.
We'll get to that in just a second. What is a flyway? Somebody tell us what a flyway is.
Well, in the several decades right after the Migratory Bird Treaty Act was signed, migratory bird hunting regulations were set along latitudinal gradients. So the South had one set of regulations, and the North and middle latitude states each had their different regulations. In 20 years after or so that...
That was 1918. So we're 100th anniversary
itself.
Here this year. Okay.
Right.
Got it.
100th anniversary of the Act. So... 20 years or so later, Frederick Lincoln did an analysis of banding information, banding data on waterfowl, that indicated that there were pathways, specific pathways that ducks took from Canada down to the U.S. and point south, if for some species, on their annual fall migration route. And he developed the term flyways to characterize the major migration pathways, the 4 major pathways that birds take going north to south on migration. In 1948, the Fish and Wildlife Service decided, hey, that would be a pretty good way to manage harvest regulations for these game bird species. And so the service at that time switched over from latitudinal gradients to flyway management. And just shortly thereafter, the four flyways, the states and provinces in those flyways developed those flyway councils. And the Atlantic Flyway, I think, was 1952 is when the Flyway Council came into existence, but shortly after 48 when we changed our system of managing regulations.
And management is based on the fluctuating population grade levels of each of the waterfowl species.
Yeah.
People wonder why we have, you know, why we allowed two bluebills one year and three the next, or one canvasback or whatever it might be. And I mean, you got to stay up on it because it's all based, I guess, on population levels.
Right. Population levels and to some extent habitat conditions.
Got
that
it.
That influence those population levels. Yes. When the flyway system of regulations was first established, there are differences in hunting regulations. Season length, for example, is
sure.
It's longer in the Pacific Flyway. It's shorter in the Mississippi and Atlantic Flyways. That was all based on two main things. One is how many ducks there were in the flyway. Second, how many hunters there were in the flyway. So in the Pacific Flyway, they had and they still have lots of ducks, not very many hunters.
Right.
So they have a long season and a slightly more liberal bag limit.
Mm-hmm.
In the Atlantic Flyway, we have quite a few hunters, not a whole lot, quite a few hunters, not all that many ducks. So we have a much shorter season. Mississippi Flyway has lots of ducks, but also lots of hunters. 50% of the duck hunters in the country are in the Mississippi Flyway. So they typically have regulations that are similar to the Atlantic Flyways. And the Central Flyway is somewhere in between. They've got a lot of ducks, not all that many hunters, but quite a few. So
sure.
They're in between. And that's historically been the way we've managed ever since.
And you have, I believe you said, 17 states, 6 provinces, and
Puerto Rico
mm-hmm. territory. And that's in the Atlantic. That's a lot of management territory. And
it is.
Josh, we have the epicenter of Canada goose wintering right here in the Delmarva Peninsula, correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. We have the epicenter, the wintering ground, but it is certainly a shared resource as those birds travel south from the nesting grounds in Canada, and that's what makes the Flyway Council and interacting with the other states and our peers in that council so important.
So the question gets asked, and I've been asked, and I'm sure you guys hear it all the time, how can they kill so many more in states north of us, and how can they kill more in Canada than we're allowed to kill right here in Maryland? And you guys have a FAQ, a frequently asked question site on the Maryland Department of Natural Resources, which I find to be very good. It answers a lot of those types of questions. But it's basically, there's a difference between a state like New York and Pennsylvania where the geese pass through as opposed to where they spend the most of their winter, where they're most susceptible. Does that answer that question, kind of?
Yeah, that's very close to the answer. So we monitor harvest, of course, through the banding program that we operate and also through the parts collection survey. Most waterfowl hunters maybe sometime in their career have received wing envelopes from the Fish and Wildlife Service or a diary survey, and so those are the things that both the states and the Fish and Wildlife Service use to monitor harvest. So we know kind of the proportion of the harvest that occurs in each state. And Maryland, of course, has of the AP goose harvest, we harvest the most of them. You know, of that harvest, I think we're
40%
of
the where they stay for the longest period of time. The hunting season overlaps that stay, and they're very susceptible, plus the fact that Maryland hunters are very good at killing geese.
Maryland hunters are very good at killing geese. Absolutely, you know.
Not necessarily everybody's good at shooting them, but we're good at killing them.
Well, that's right. You know, there are those days where you wish you'd spend a little more time on the sporting clays range or the skeet range.
Sure,
that's for sure. But yeah, we have experienced goose hunters. You know, we have a well developed outfitting business, and you know, this is basically the southern terminus for this population of geese. Now there's a few, you know, that still go to Virginia and North Carolina, but as we know, that's changed a lot over the years. It used to be North Carolina and Point South back in the day, and it switched to Delmarva and probably still changing a little bit, but for right now we're still the center of the wintering ground for sure.
Got it. Here we are in the first segment. We'll be switching up here in a minute or two, but it is time for me to tell the folks about a couple of our sponsors, including Clyde Sports Shop. Now, for you goose hunters, want to mention the Browning BPS shotgun has what most other pump shotguns don't have, features like the rigid dual machine steel action bars, the forged and matched steel receiver, a convenient top tang safety and bottom ejection for ambidextrous operation. Either hand. The legendary Browning balance and handling, of course. All gauges are available, plus both 12 and 20 gauge deer models are also available. Check out the BPS shotgun at Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9. And you can call 410-242-6108. Clyde's is your full-line Browning dealer. Browning, the best there is. And let me tell you about the Great American Outdoor Show. That's coming up February 2nd to the 10th in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. 650,000 square feet of guns, hunting, fishing, and archery. It's the world's largest outdoor sports show. More than 200 seminars from outdoor pros, 400 hunting and fishing outfitters, interactive events, your favorite outdoor celebrities, and entertainment for the whole family. The Great American Outdoor Show features an NRA country concert featuring Lee Bryce, Easton Corbin, and Tyler Farr. Live the adventure at the Great American Outdoor Show, February 2nd to the 10th, at the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex in Harrisburg. Tickets on sale now at greatamericanoutdoorshow.org, and we'll be right back after these messages. Alan Ellis here for Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie spray-on bedliners. Linex spray-on bedliners rated number one, carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust in your bed. Your tools, your tackle, your crabbing and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose the Linex premium bedliner or the Linex Extra. Both look great. And Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards. You get it. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex spray-on bedliner, truck gear, and accessories. Catonsville Linex, new location, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill, just off Security Boulevard across from Coons Ford, 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Linex.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
It can't be shut down.
I would certainly be willing to close it down.
And no wall could keep it out.
Walls work.
It can't be stopped.
Winter
officially arrived.
Is officially here.
It's here. And it's cold.
So for the next couple of months, we're officially screwed.
The weather's really changing.
Whatever the season serves up.
Cold, snowy conditions.
Icy and dangerous roads.
We'll help you get through it.
Plow through.
Talk Radio 680. WCBM.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but
and I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Let's talk about America. Not taxes or tweets or the issues that divide us, but how incredible our country is. Whether you come home to a crowded city street or sleepy small town, everyone deserves to live in a clean, green, and thriving community. We are Keep America Beautiful, the nonprofit working with millions of people like you to end littering, improve recycling, and beautify communities. Learn more at KAB.org. Together, we can do beautiful things.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Now more from Alan Ellis and the Outdoorsman Radio Show on Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Hey, we're back. We're back with Josh Homniak and Bill Harvey and Paul Padding. Paul is from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the other two fellows are waterfowl guys here from Maryland's DNR, Wildlife and Heritage Service. So I'd like to correct something right now, and if I said it, I probably said it with all the conviction that I had. We talked about on earlier shows, and people had called in about the goose situation and so forth. We talked about how many geese we killed here in Maryland last year. And somewhere we had that number over somewhere north of 170,000 geese. Is that correct? And I may have put out there, I may have said this, but only because it came to me in this way, that we've killed 40%, not of the population, but we've killed 40% of the harvest of Canada geese in the flyway. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that's a rumor that I've heard several times too. Not really a rumor, just a misnomer. But the Chesapeake region, which in the AP Goose Harvest Plan is Delaware, Virginia, and Maryland, kills about or is responsible for about 40% of the harvest. So, you know, of that 170-some thousand birds that were estimated to be harvested last year, the Chesapeake region is responsible for about 40% of that harvest. So I think the misnomer has been that we were killing 40% of the total population of geese. So that number was right, but just how it was used has been, I've heard it used incorrectly several times in the past few months.
That must have been me all several times. Perhaps, but it has been out there. That number's been out there. So the total percentage of the total harvest of Canada geese, Paul, said 7%.
We're only talking about the Atlantic population,
right.
The migrant population,
right.
Of Atlantic population geese.
Right.
Yeah, it's around 7 to 9% annually. Of the adult birds are harvested flyway wide.
Okay. So there's plenty left, but
yes.
But you've got to still have the babies to make bigger numbers.
Right.
Okay.
And the 170,000 number for Maryland,
right,
is not just AP geese. That's resident population geese, et cetera.
Okay.
I guess that's the only other population we really have here, but there are a lot of those in Maryland.
What is the resident population?
In Maryland, we have the resident population is about 60,000 to 70,000 before they nest, you know, in the spring.
60,000 to 70,000 before they nest.
Another important point is that in addition to the local birds we have that actually breed in Maryland, there's a lot of resident geese from other states and even the southern Canada that move here in the winter when they're forced to by, cold and icy conditions.
So we've got Bill Harvey in the background. You can't hear him very well. It's kind of like the reporter shouting the question at the press conference, you know. But 60 to 70,000 resident geese in Maryland before they nest in the spring. And these are the ones that we regulate to shoot in early September. And then when the AP population season is in, certain areas of the state are set aside as RP, resident population geese, and the bag limit on those is higher. And I don't know if you guys have numbers on this. I'm sure you do, the banding numbers. There are always, from what we understand, AP geese mixed in with those resident birds or vice versa.
There are always resident birds mixed in with the AP geese in the AP zones. There are typically a few AP geese in the RP zones, as evidenced by the fact that we get hardly any band recoveries of AP geese in those zones.
Resident
and that's
zones.
Why we're able to designate them as resident zones.
Resident zones, and the limit is higher.
We have evidence that there are very few AP geese there.
Got it. Now, does U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service regulate resident birds as well as the flyway birds?
Yes, in terms of setting hunting regulations
right.
for them, yes. Again, we typically rely on the flyway councils to develop management plans for geese, including resident geese,
mm-hmm.
and we work with them on developing those plans, but that's what we follow in the harvest management of those populations, too, resident and migrant.
Gotcha. Josh, how are we doing on the resident geese? I mean, it seems like there's no lack of them, even though we have liberal bag limits early and late.
Yeah, there's no lack of them, that's for sure. From a population estimate standpoint, we seem to have slowed the population growth, maybe leveled it out, you know, with these more liberal harvest regulations and some of the other forms of take that are permitted. And that's important because these resident geese, as hunters, we like to see them in the fall. But as the state agency responsible for managing wildlife, that includes managing wildlife conflict through the rest of the year. And that includes crop damage complaints from resident geese, which are not uncommon in the agricultural areas of the state. And plenty of other complaints from golf courses and retirement homes and all the places that are humans develop usually create great goose habitat. They like grassy lawns and retention ponds and a lot of these places that are developed, it's difficult to get any hunting pressure on them. So, you know, there certainly are problem hot spots, but we think the liberal hunting regulations have at the least slowed population growth and mm-hmm. maybe leveled them off a little bit.
Okay, that's good. That's a good answer, and you know that's the fact. So those RP geese are not included in that, are included in that harvest number of that 170, whatever. So all the guys that are knocking down five a day out there in the western part of the state and other places are included in that. Not necessarily in the AP migratory goose.
Right.
So that's okay. Got it. Now, okay, we had fellas out on the first day. One fellow I talked to, they were able to take five geese with six guys, I mean, all day. Four of those geese were immature birds. What would your guess be? Resident birds?
I wouldn't.
Because of the, I'm just throwing that out, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but because of the lack of recruitment this year.
You know, we would certainly expect that most of the geese killed in the AP zone, you know, if they were AP geese, and you could tell for sure, you know, in hand that one was an AP goose and one was a resident
geese.
You can,
right?
Which is very difficult to do.
I got it.
You know, in a small sample size like that, I wouldn't care to take a guess.
Okay. Yeah. That's a logical answer. That's for sure. No question. So, talk a little bit about the state's involvement with the Fish and Wildlife Service and how that all comes about.
Yeah, so the state's all have input into, particularly in, into geese, into the harvest management plans through the Flyway Council that we talked about earlier. And the Flyway Council, all four Flyway Councils, are made up of a technical section, which are the biologist types, and the council, which are high-level decision makers from each of the state agencies. So basically each state agency and province has a biologist that attends the meeting and is a member of the technical section, and they look at the biological data that's collected throughout the year and make recommendations to the council, who are the high-level decision makers, usually the directors of the state agency, you know, for each state. And then they ultimately make the, you know, the final decision on if these recommendations get forwarded to the Fish and Wildlife Service, where they're reviewed by the Service Regulation Committee.
You got that down pat. I couldn't follow, but that's, you guys got the, your act together, and you've had 100 years to do it, so I'm hoping you're good at it.
It really is a pretty good system, and reviews things from a lot of different angles, and you have many people with many different types of expertise and different takes on things.
Well, you've got
playing nice together.
That's good. You got the guy on the ground that goes up to the Arctic Circle and walks among them, the geese, and counts them. I mean, you count them from the air, but you also have boots on the ground because you're doing banding surveys and you're physically checking the nest to see if there's any hatchlings, any recruitment, and how many's in each nest that you check. Of course, you can't do it all because it's a monstrous region, but you go to different sections of the, I guess it's the Ungava Peninsula, where they, I believe, Paul, you told me earlier that they nest on both sides of the peninsula, correct?
That was probably Bill that told you that. He's the real expert when it comes to the biology.
We'll get him in here in a minute. Okay, we'll get Bill in here in a minute. But yeah, maybe it was you, Bill. You're sitting here in the back, just kind of, he's like the principal in the room. Now we'd like to see how the class performs today. But he'll get his chance here in a second. And the only reason is because we're in a very cramped studio recording this, and there's not that many mics. But we're doing great. We're doing great. So you've got the biologist, boots on the grounds guys. They report to their supervisors. Their supervisors report to the flyway people, and then everybody works together and says, these numbers are good, bad, or indifferent, good, bad, or ugly, whatever they are. And then the council debates all this, and all these representatives from these 17 states, Puerto Rico, and the six provinces get together and say, how do we divvy up the pie?
Well,
kind
of. Yes, it's at this point, you know, a number of decades into this, it's a lot more canned than that. These management plans that I talked about earlier all come with a harvest strategy. And that the harvest strategies basically say, if this, then that. So if we see this many geese, and we saw that many the year before, then this is what the hunting season's going to look like.
So at one point it was, correct me please if I'm wrong, if we can go to three birds in Maryland if we have 225,000 nesting pairs.
A three-year running average of 225,000 nesting pairs, yes.
And we've had those numbers, but we haven't had those numbers for a three-year running total since the moratorium back in the ballpark.
I think we came close once
right.
to 220 or something like that, but no, we haven't had the three-year average at all.
Got it. Hang on. One place you can go for a lot of goose talk and a lot of good goose information is Chesapeake Outdoors right there in Kent Island. You just take your Route 50, go to exit 39B. That's Dominion Road. Get off right there. You'll see the big sign on the right-hand side, and it is the first choice for Eastern Shore hunters and anglers. Now, look, they've got all the waterfowl calls in the area, all major brands, largest selection, decoy, steel shot, gear, camo, banded camouflage clothing, large selection of boots and hips and waders and all that. And on weekends, they do waterfowl picking, too. So if you bag your limited geese, you get some ducks, take them in there. They'll brush them out. They'll clean them up. They'll get them ready for you to go put in the oven. Firearms and ammunition by Remington, Chiappa. Muzzleloaders and accessory. Crossbows by Excalibur and Raven and 10-point and more. It's all there at Chesapeake Outdoors. Of course, they're starting to talk about fishing season, too. So check that out. That's Chesapeake Outdoors, 39B Dominion Road, right off Route 50 on Ken Island, 410-604-2500. Now, let me tell you about this particular firearm, a Browning A5 autoloader. Come hell or high water, the hump is back. You may notice a family resemblance, but let's get one thing straight. This ain't your grandpa's Auto 5. In fact, the iconic humpback-shaped receiver is the only thing this new Browning autoloader shares with its legendary namesake. The all-new Browning A5 is built to be the most reliable, fastest cycling, best-performing, and softest shooting recoil-operated, I said recoil-operated, autoloader on the planet. Browning is so confident in the A5, they're standing behind it with a 100,000-rounder five-year guarantee that this shotgun will work come hell or high water. Check out the Browning A5 autoloader at Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9. Call 410-242-6108. Clyde's is your full-line Browning dealer. Browning, the best there is. And we'll be right back after this.
We'll see that snow become likely as we get into the latter part of the day today, and we are headed up the low to mid-30s. We kick in a winter weather advisory, also some winter storm warnings out there. Could see anywhere from 2 to 4 inches of snow. Locally higher amounts are possible. More snow tonight, overnight low 28. Snow showers early for Sunday, afternoon high up to around 35 degrees. And then we do have a slight chance for snow early for our Monday. I'm Jeff Eno from the Weather Channel for Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
This is Alan Ellis for Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex spray-on bedliners. Linex spray-on bedliners are rated number one and carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust in your bed. Your tools, your tackle, crabbing, and hunting gear can't hurt it. Choose the Linex Premium or the Linex Extra. Both look great. Bay Linex and Catonsville Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, you get it. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex bed liner and truck gear accessories. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. 410-789-0199. 410-789-0199. Catonsville Linex, new location, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill, just off Security Boulevard across from Coons Ford. 410-455-0800. 410-455-0800. Linex. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you. W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg is taking care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything, their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
The news you want to know.
I don't even know if the president wants the war. The
president has said
we have the absolute right to declare a national emergency.
Do it. Do it now.
Manufacturing crisis.
Look at President Obama's statement. Calls it a crisis.
Crisis on the border that only underscores the need to strengthen security at our borders.
They're not winning this argument. They're losing the argument badly. They know it.
Check in off.
We owe it to the American people.
This
is like a service.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes. And you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we're fighting against childhood cancer every day. At the heart of this battle are our donors.
Most of us want to make some type of difference in the lives of others. St. Jude does miraculous work.
The fact that no one has to pay, it's a place where everyone is treated as an equal.
Everybody is welcome here, and it doesn't matter your religion or what part of the world you're from, all that is taken away. It just gives you some hope.
It's just a nice feeling to put your energy into something that really does genuinely make a difference in a child's life.
There's just no greater gift. If we have the ability to help, then we have a responsibility to help.
Finding cures, saving children. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Find out how you can help at stjude.org.
Soldiers returning with traumatic brain injuries or other serious battle wounds often spend weeks or months in a VA hospital or other rehab facility. DVDs for Vets is collecting DVDs and portable players for distribution in our community and nationwide. Many of us take for granted our access to everyday enjoyments, and DVDs for Vets needs your help in giving these injured soldiers some diversions from the monotony of a hospital stay during recovery. To donate new or used DVDs or to learn more about this worthy cause, please go to www.dvdsforvets.org.
Talk Radio 680 WCPM.
And now more from Alan Ellis and the Outdoorsman Radio Show on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Now that's Ira Siegel, our master producer's voice that says now more on Alan Ellis is going to be back. Or what did you say? More on hunting or more on? I don't like you've called me a moron. Anyway, Josh has switched seats with Bill Harvey. Bill is the game bird section leader of the Wildlife and Natural Heritage Service Department of Natural Resources. And, you know, he's sitting back here over our shoulder just glaring at us, you know, trying to correct all the mistakes that we made, especially mine coming into the next hour. But, Bill, talk about, you're the man on the ground. You're the boots on the ground guy. Talk a little bit about that
I think it's worthwhile to spend a few minutes talking about the goose populations we have in the flyway. The one everybody thinks about that's so important to Maryland is the Atlantic population. These are the birds that nest in northern Quebec, mainly on the Ungava Peninsula, which is about 1,000 miles north of Maryland. And then in the fall, they leave the breeding grounds, and eventually they get to Maryland, which is the primary wintering area for those birds. In the eastern part, the New England area of the flyway, there's other geese that nest in Labrador and Newfoundland that are also migrant geese. And these birds, when they come south in the winter, they winter along the New England coast south to about Long Island. And then in roughly the last 100 years or so, there's what we all call the resident Canada geese that are really only here because people put them here. There's game agencies move geese around, you know, in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Some people attribute the resident geese to the release of decoy flocks when live decoys were made illegal in the 30s. And then there's a lot of people that if you just buy a pair of geese and want to put them on your farm pond, those are birds that also didn't typically migrate. And these birds they've been around for a long time, but the numbers really exploded in the, really about when I started here in Maryland in the late 80s.
So 1 plus 1, resident goose equals 12.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Got it.
And one of the really important things with the increase of resident geese, when I first started in the late 80s and for decades prior to that, the goose were monitored and really managed by surveys that were conducted in the winter. And for many years, basically you were, you know, those were all Atlantic population or migrant geese. So we knew what we were looking at. In the late 80s, when resident goose numbers really started to increase and the AP and the resident birds mix, you know, and when you're flying from the air, you certainly can't tell them apart. So at that time, it became really, really important that we started to work on the breeding grounds where when we looked at a goose from the air, we knew it was an Atlantic population goose. So we had some good, reliable numbers to manage the population.
And that required going to the nesting grounds, which is what you did or do still.
Yeah. For about, I flew the monitoring, the most important monitoring that we do is the spring survey where we estimate the size of the breeding population. So when the geese leave here in late February or early March, it takes them about 2 months or so to get to the breeding grounds.
It's all uphill.
It's all uphill, yeah. And they actually are starting to nest not until about late May or early June. So every year we go up with a small plane. We're usually there about the middle of June, and we pretty much all the geese nest at about the same time because the summer and spring is so short. So we're there about halfway through incubation, and we fly about, usually takes about 6 days of flying. We fly at about 150 feet above the ground, with a pilot and two observers. And we count on either side of the plane for a certain distance out the number of geese we see, the number of single geese, the number of pairs, and the number of groups of geese. And from those long, narrow transects that we do throughout the area, that's how we estimate the number of pairs and the total population.
That's quite a feat.
Interject,
yeah,
sure. Something.
Sure,
the,
Paul.
This survey is another good example of the cooperative nature of flyway business. It's flown by a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service pilot and airplane. The observers are Canadian Wildlife Service and Maryland DNR, a representative from the Atlantic Flyway Council. So
right.
It's a good, again, a good cooperative effort.
Good cooperative effort. How many other states do this? Any? States in the flyway, how many go to the...
Well, it's...
How many other representatives like yourself?
Maryland, because we have such a vested interest in AP geese, we regularly... You know, I spent 20 years or so flying the survey because it's really important to us. But on a regular basis, both Maryland and other states as well send people up... the first week in August, usually the second part of our monitoring, in addition to the pair survey that we do, is we send crews, usually two helicopters and two crews, that go up there the first week in August to actually band geese. And again, Maryland, we regularly send people there, but other states do as well. So it's, you know, it's a, as Paul said, it's a real cooperative effort. And one thing he didn't mention was, in addition to personnel and aircraft, you know, a lot of all the work in the north is really, really expensive. And so the funding for all these surveys, it's also cooperative from the Fish and Wildlife Service, and then each state contributes a substantial amount of money to the monitoring to pay for what we do.
Is that where our bird stamp?
$9
bird
stamp. That's where a portion of the $9 goes to every year. Yep.
Sure. Which is vitally important, mm-hmm. as well. I mean, you know, you got to have the money to rent the planes and pay the people's salary to do the work. And it sounds intriguing, but I imagine it's somewhat exhausting as well to be up there for that amount of time. Doesn't sound like you're going to Vegas.
No, you're not going to Vegas, but if you're interested in wildlife and wild things, I mean, it's way far north. There's very few people. The only people really are the Inuits that live in villages along the coast. So it's been a great experience.
Sure, absolutely. Maybe we'll put that on the bucket list for sure. So you've got a population. I mean, based on our surveys, what is the historical population, or maybe the past decade, or give us some numbers about where we were and where we are? How, you know, we had a moratorium here,
right,
during the time of your tenure,
right,
where we closed the Canada goose season for 5 years, and we went from down to one bird and then to nothing, and then back to one bird, and now, you know, you had to check all of them in, you had to, you know, go and send a toenail sample or something of every bird. I mean, it was tough there coming back from the moratorium, but I was just kidding.
So, yeah,
that.
For a little perspective, we started doing the surveys in the north in 1993. And at that, you know, even prior to that time, the population had likely been declining. In 1995, the survey estimated only 40,000 pairs. And at that time, and about 3 years before that, it was around 100,000 pairs. So at that time, the Flyway Council, and it was supported by the Fish and Wildlife Service, decided that we really needed to close the season to give that population a chance to rebound. And it was closed from 1995 until 2001. And during that time, they had at least a couple good, really good breeding years. The adults were surviving at a high rate because there was no sport hunting either in the U.S. or Canada. And we saw the population really increase quickly. And the hunting season resumed in 2001. And by that time, the population had increased to over 100,000 pairs. And in about the last 20 years or so, the population's been pretty much stable ever since we resumed hunting, in the range of 150 to maybe 200,000 pairs. And we've been in these moderate regulations, which for us amounted to about our 50-day season with a two-bird limit. There's been a number of years in the last 10 that the production was below average because of late springs and thaws, which tends to depress the productivity of the geese. And in the last couple of years, we've seen the number of pairs drop pretty substantially, whereas this year the estimate was about 112,000. And 3 years ago was about 190,000. So we're starting to see the population decline, and we're concerned about that. But to put it in perspective, we're making changes now well before we get into the level like we were in the 90s, where we had to actually close the hunting season altogether.
So we're erring on the side of caution and conservation with the proposal, or the, I guess it's set in stone for next year with the 30-day one-bird season. It's already been established, and that's what it's going to be.
It's not exactly set in stone, but it's fairly close to that. So when the technical section, the Flyway Council, we met in late September, and the recommendation that came out of the technical section that was supported by the council was for the hunting seasons in the zone, in the parts of the states that have a Atlantic population zone. And that zone is that's where most of the Atlantic population geese are harvested in each of the states. It's where about 90% of each state's Atlantic population goose harvest occurs.
Mm-hmm.
The recommendation was for to go to restrictive season, which for Maryland in 2019-20 would be a 30-day season with a one-bird limit.
Okay, more on that when we come back in the next hour, that's for sure. right now to tell you about one more time, Chesapeake Outdoors, located at Route 50 East, exit 39B, Dominion Road. They do waterfowl picking. If you take a couple geese today or you get some ducks, take them in there. They'll clean them up for you. They carry banded camouflage clothing for the waterfowl hunters. They sell the Rambo bikes for those of you who want to get back in the wilderness. Raven Excalibur 10-point Mission Barnett and Carbon Express crossbows as well. Ammunition and firearms by Remington, Chiappa, muzzleloaders and accessories from CVA. And the largest selection of waterfowl calls, decoys, steel shot, gear and camo, Yeti coolers, Costa sunglasses, and even Bubba Blade knives. Right there at Chesapeake Outdoors, Route 50 East, exit 39B, Dominion Road on Kent Island, 410-604-2500. We want to thank Paul Padding, Bill Harvey, and Josh Homniak for being here this hour. We'll have more of those guys when we come back. And now it's time for me to say, get out, stay out, and stay safe.